Welcome to the Relancer podcast, where we talk about talent acquisition topics. I'm Eero, the co-founder of Relancer, the platform where employers connect with freelance recruiters. Today we have Dom, and we will be talking about how to use psychology in recruitment. Welcome, Dom.
Nice to meet you, Eero, and thank you very much for the invitation. It's a real pleasure being with you today.
So for the listeners, we met with Dom a long time ago, I would say. I remember that back then you were working for a recruitment agency that was hiring in mainly, I think, in Netherlands.
Yeah, mainly, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then you were basically making a transition to do your own thing. And I think we were able to get you some clients in the beginning, at least to get your new journey going.
Exactly. As far as I believe, the first time we spoke, you were at the start with Relancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we had one introductory call just to... you were validating your idea, you were receiving ideas and expanding your network. So I remember being quite happy for you at that point. And then around, I don't know, 4 or 5 months later, when we started with SAN, you were actually both you and Relancer were one of the first to support us, and not just with advisors, but with bringing clients to our doors, good ones, nicely matched. So now perhaps it's a good moment to share that official thank you for all of your support.
That's always good to see. And I also looked into the site and I was there's so many recruiters already, so you're quite big at the moment, or you have progressed quite nicely. So that's really nice to see that you are making the dream reality, let's say, in that way. But can you share a bit about your journey? So you have background in psychology and then also I think in some kind of psychotherapy. What's the journey behind there, and then how did you end up in recruiting?
You know the story how everyone ends up in recruiting, right? No one, I believe, intentionally goes into a recruitment career. But in my case, I feel that there is more to it. So my interest in psychology started around, 2010, so before even university. The first book that I have ever met in terms of psychology was A Psychology of Talent and Giftedness. So fast forward, I end up learning from the people in the university who wrote that specific book. And within university, especially my interest was within organizational psychology, social personality psychology, and also psychometrics. So those were my area of interest, and I was really eager to work within organization. So that's how I saw myself. And then within the universities that was really active, had the chance to work for various institutions and companies as part of internship. I also had the chance to be a co-founder of the first Macedonian Association of Psychology Students, which is, by the way, still active today. Greetings to my fellows at CIHESCO, and they are doing really, really good, by the way. So that was a great opportunity to learn, try out different industries, and see whatever works best for me. So I remember working in, educational institutions, NGOs, government institutions for employability development skills for youth people. Once graduating, I had, before graduating, I got my first job. So I had the chance to choose between two options. One was within market research as a researcher. And then the other one was as a talent acquisition specialist at international recruitment company. So you can guess what was my choice at the end. But then... luckily, and why I am happy for that decision is the following. So actually, recruitment, it's a really good gateway for organizational psychology. That's one. And then the second one, what I really, really liked is that there's a lot of unexplored opportunities, unexplored area on where you can apply psychology within specifically in recruitment. I know that in selection, psychology is doing excellent job in terms of psychometrics and the interviewing stages and so on, but in terms of recruitment, not so much. So that's where we see the opportunity to proceed, innovate.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is a lot of possibilities in there, and in general, I think unconsciously we use a lot of psychology in many stages, but but people maybe don't realize how they actually are using it. Like what I also noticed, actually, it's quite common, at least what I have noticed, is quite common to for recruiters to have some kind of psychology background. So it seems to be one of the ways, like career choices after learning and psychology, because you can use it quite successfully in recruitment.
Well, yeah, definitely. The ones who are interested in organizational psychology, one of the options is starting with recruitment. And it's something that I would like normally advise, since you get to be familiar with broader things like organizational structures, how companies operate. And especially if you are within agency setting, then you get to learn from many different companies. So that's good start.
I also saw you that you're part of like Relaxify app. What is it and what you're doing in Relaxify app?
Yeah, so Relaxify app started somewhere really close to the start of Scient as well. It's an end-to-end well-being platform and mobile application that actually supports companies to enhance the well-being of their employees. And how it's done, so it's actually like there are programs and gamified exercise that boost their well-being across four dimensions: social, emotional, and physical well-being. And it's actually, let's say, more focused on prevention, increasing awareness, but also it is supporting employees to build better well-being habits, so better mental health hygiene. It is not a substitute to professional support, to like psychotherapy and so on, but it's very good for prevention and for building habits. The mission is something that really, really caught my attention at the start. And the two co-founders, Yuan and Alec, actually like reach out to me. We knew each other from before and decided like to support this idea, since it's a really great one and there is a lot of need for that. And me, along with the team of psychologists, we joined to make this reality. And personally, like I joined as a co-founder, so we are like still doing a lot of things with Relaxify, and they are actually at the moment it's exciting times, and a lot of new things will be happening there. So if anyone is looking for a well-being solution for their organization, feel free to explore Relaxify.
I think well-being is something that is super important, but not so much covered by companies. For example, we at Relancer, we took a course on mental health and well-being. There is like organization in Estonia, and then we went with our employees to take part of that course. Helpful, but for example, people working in talent acquisition, like it's known to have a high stress level and so on. So definitely having some initiatives or even others like teaching people about mental health and how to like maintain a good mental health is super important.
So actually, like, things are changing in a positive way now. As of January this year, I think that companies use sustainability policies. Now, companies who have more than 500 employees are obliged to report what kind of activities they do for in terms of well-being at workplace. So it's great to see that things are slowly beginning to go in a very good direction. And I believe it's just the start now. So of course, a lot of things have been done in the past, but I think that the need is rising as we speak.
Yeah, I had a friend also who wanted to do something in that space. And then a few years ago, he had like a really hard time because people understand why it's needed, but there is like a really hard to get buy-ins from the companies. But if there is like these kinds of like requirements, that definitely helps a lot. So yeah, let's move forward about recruiting. So having some psychology knowledge is definitely helpful, like if you're in talent acquisition. So maybe we can go like step by step how we can improve like each recruitment step by applying some principles in psychology. So maybe let's start even before the actual recruitment, like how can psychology help us with identifying hiring needs?
So in terms of, let's say, recruitment in like the overall process, there is like unlimited opportunities on what kind of theories you can apply. Everything before that needs to be like tested, validated, and see if it works for the specific needs of the company as well. I'm just like thinking about how to go forward without becoming very much abstract. I like the idea from starting from the needs, from the organizational needs step, since we can apply there several theories and concepts from organizational psychology for a start, and also like personality one. There are several ways to do that, and I will stick more to some of the theories that I personally like to use, since due to the simplicity and the effectiveness of those. But a few things that we can do is, first, psychology can help us to understand the team dynamics, the culture of the organization, and perhaps also to identify need for adding a new person with specific skill set in some areas. That can be done like in several ways. Of course, the first one is like performance metrics and seeing where we need like improvement. If your strategy is to solve that with hiring, then that's a starting point. Of course, this is like not only a psychological thing, but also management aspect. But psychology can really, really help within the job. And then the second would be identifying the so. In these steps, a lot of companies, what they're doing, they are performing psychometric assessment on their team in order to assess the culture. And then based on that, they connect that with their business goals and decide what kind of people they need in order to do that. So let's say, and in this step, so easiest to use is the DISC methodology. I can share more about that as we go. But let's say if it's a startup company that needs to grow fast, they need to be agile a lot, they need to fail, to try and fail really fast. We might be looking for more, let's say, innovative, risk-taker people who are really into action and so on. So in terms of DISC, we would be looking probably for influential and more dominant people. And then if it's a company that's, let's say, already going to a scale-up phase when they need, let's say, more structure and more more built processes, then we can go with some people who are more conscious, process driven, detail oriented, and so on. So that's on the beginning when we start identifying the needs in terms of what kind of people we need. And then what I would like to use like at any stage of the recruitment process are the theories for needs and motivations. The most basic one with which I believe that everyone is familiar with, or most are familiar with, is the Maslow theory. So I can actually take a moment like to explain this one, since if we want to mention like the next steps, probably I will be referring to this theory a lot. So based on Maslow theory of needs, and human needs are the ones, let's say, most basic drivers that every person is striving for in order to have like a regular optimal level of well-being. So there are five levels of needs, starting with the most basic ones, physiological needs. So those are the needs for food, for sleep, you know, the physiological ones. And this can be translated within organizational setting as the bare minimum that a company needs in order to function. So what physiological needs are for individual human, for a company that would be I don't know, like enough cash flow to be able like to cover the expenses, to be able like to cover the salaries and the other operational needs. And then if we are hiring and the company has this challenge, then we need to find the people who will be suitable for solving such challenges. That's one. But also to know how to later in the communication stage, in the outreach stage, how to communicate this with the candidates so they already know what they are signing in for. So that's the first level of needs, are the physiological needs. Then the second ones are the safety ones. The safety ones in terms of organization may be, I don't know, like enough, let's say, legal protection, enough, let's say, safety processes and so on. And then if we are looking also to hire someone in this process, then we need what kind of people we need in order to adjust these needs. And it's the same when we are looking for a candidate needs. So we'll go through an example after this, but let me just go through all of them. Safety needs in terms of people can be regarding resources, personal security, having employment, having some kind of property, so anything that keeps you safe. If you remember, before COVID, this was something that no one was looking on a job.
Nobody
Everyone
cared.
Was looking to more, let's say, advanced needs. But then after COVID and after the wars and the change in the market, the needs of the candidates are more whether the job security is there, whether they will have a constant job, whether they would be able like to pay the bills and so on. So these are more basic needs. And actually, this is one of the applications. So now we need, when we are reaching out to candidates, that we address this need if it's already like being covered by the company. And we had an example where we adjusted the pitch of the company based on this, since we had a client who, no matter like the COVID or the worst and so on, they decided not to let anyone behind, so they had zero layoffs. And this was a really good selling point and was really important for the candidates hearing in this type of, let's say, unsecure times. So we covered the physiological needs and we covered the safety needs. The third layer is the need for love and belonging. So in terms of, let's say, individuals or candidates or people, those are the needs for friendship, intimacy, family, being and some sense of connection. In terms of work, that might be, let's say, feeling part of the community, feel be identified with your company on the job, and then having meaningful relationship with your people. And then if that is something that the culture offer, and if that is something that is already part of the needs of the specific candidate, we can focus our conversation on this one and addressing their needs and how they are covered within the position that we are searching for. In terms of organizational needs related to this level, there might be, let's say, good culture, good team atmosphere, good communication channels and practices. So those are some of the things that
team events.
LA... Sorry?
Like team events, like so you can get together and then some other things like that.
Yeah. Something that the talent development team and the people department is actually focused on. Then the next one, the fourth layer is the esteem, and it's related to respect, self-esteem, to status in most of the cases and so on. So in terms of job, here people are thinking about, let's say, things like do they get promotions? Are they have like a value job? Do they have an impact in their role and so on? So that's on candidate side. In terms of companies, if they are recognized in the marketplace, if they are perceived as a big player or a key player, and if they are thinking about implementing such strategies, then we need like people who have the same drivers on the other side in order like to make that happen as well. And then the final level of needs are the self-actualization ones, when for people that would be like growing and fulfilling their potentials. And then for organizations, the parallel will be reaching their mission, innovating a lot, like going above and beyond, and perhaps working already on topics like sustainability and things like that. So those are the five levels of needs. This is like based on the Maslow theories. There are like a few more that are useful in this stage, but for the sake of simplicity, I will stick to this one. So when identifying hiring needs, I would personally look for the organizational needs that I just mentioned. And when speaking with hiring managers, I would like to hear what are their motivation, why they are hiring. If they are hiring someone, let's say senior director of business development, my question would be why you are hiring them. So if they are hiring them in order like to save the company and, let's say, avoid layouts and costs, then we are talking about safety needs and physiological needs in terms of company level. But then if they are looking to expand and be able like to invest and to beat their competition, perhaps they are looking at the value. This will change the approach, how we do things differently and how we communicate them with the clients. So for this stage, I covered like having psychometric assessment in the beginning in order to see hiring needs. Then learning about the organizational needs. And then the third one might be, and this is rarely practiced since it's expensive, but it's really good, to develop internal criteria of success. So if you have, let's say, 100 employees and you are thinking, okay, what makes my sales department really successful? You can provide them with a wider psychological assessment and then develop norms based on that. Of course, it will have to be like tested, changed over the time, and you'll need to think about the dynamics and inclusivity, but it's a very good start in order to define the right competencies that you will be checking later. So I think that it's time to move to the next phase, right?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I was also thinking how the, of course, there are specifics for companies and people, but in general, how the market changed. So it used to be that everybody wanted to work in cool startups, like take risks and have like do something meaningful, and then like the overall like the world changed, and then the organizational pyramid or priority what people wanted or needed changed, like, so it went a lot, and then still like the safety I think is very important and still involved at the moment, and of course it makes sense because it's, things are happening out there. But also you mentioned a very cool aspect, like I know a very simplified version of it, like if you're building, let's say you're building a company or startup or whatever, and in the beginning you need builders, so people like who, in a simplified example, build the roof. Like the roof doesn't have to be perfect; it has to work. Like, and at some point of stage when the company grows and the product grows, like you need people who will make sure that the roof doesn't fall in. Like, so they are very different from the builders, like who build the, or are like we sometimes call them like people who get things like started or starters, like or whatever. Like so. So they're very different, and then you need to understand what kind of people you need, like at which stage, and then it can be very different also. Like I was thinking, like if you said like, okay, the company needs safety that they don't need to lay off people, but probably they need the opposite person, like to take risks, so it's possible maybe, like so it can be also very opposite what you need actually as a solution for that problem or whatever you need.
Exactly. So there's mainly like almost always like more solutions to one problem, of course, and that's why we are looking at team dynamics. So we just do not want, usually do not recommend only having one type of people in an organization. In terms of what you shared, like different theories can be applied in terms of personalities. Bell-Bean test on team roles is also good for a startup, since it identifies the key roles that you need for a start. That's also useful theory.
Yeah. So we have a need, a company has a need. So basically, usually the next step is, like you said, to talk with the hiring man, understand what is the need behind it. And then you basically start creating like a job description, maybe doing a job ad. What can you share about that steps of the process? Like?
Yep. So in terms of the things that can be used in the job description. So first, like translating this and connecting it with the personality type if you already, or types if you have them identified already. So if we are talking about the DISC theory in the specific case for where companies looking business development director, in order to get the team on board, to shake things a bit around and to help them be a bit better performance, we might be looking for someone who is both dominant and influential type. And then in that case, we can use such wording, and the words for combination of those two profiles can be related to actions, to people, to taking charge, to innovation, communication, and so on. And then we can add that kind of word that really resonates to them, and it's related to their needs as well. Then also we can, and that is in terms of, let's say, language side. Since there is theory that we tend like to recognize or spot more things that are more similar to us, and that's why we are using this kind of theory. While we are at the language phase, now this is also like important to use like inclusive language. So there are actually like several cool tools that you can use in order to equalize the number of feminine versus masculine words, and also like to add some inclusive words as well. I'm not sure if I remember the name of that tool right away, but I can share it. So this is one cool point where you can start. I will speak now regarding, since in writing job descriptions, next to the needs, there are like few things that you need to be aware of, and coming more from the perception and memory side and attention side. So in terms of memories, usually like people mostly memorize the first, the beginnings and the end of things. So make sure to use that appropriately, and then perhaps use the first sentence to really summarize what the role is about, what the company is about, and allowing someone to understand everyone with a just like one or two sentences. Then in terms of allowing the candidates to be able like to go through the job description in details, use chunking. Chunking means like information that can be processed in different paragraphs, everything to be like organized to make sense, but then not to have a huge paragraph of text. And then related to this one is the cognitive overload bias. So do not try to do like a lot of things in the job description. Share the most important things, share things regarding the role. So they need to have like a good amount of alignment with what is expected. Then the second thing would be explain the culture. Here you can share like the things from the Maslow theory of needs. So you can share what kind of the benefits of the company is actually is addressing. Then in terms of people with specific title, let's say with specific type, for example, let's say this theory, and let's take the dominant influential type of person. So we can use like the need for freedom. We can address the autonomy that the role will have, the impact that they will have, the power like to implement things and things like that, to drive things forward. This will help them. Also, there is, by the way, really, really useful tool for this one. If you know already like the type of people that you want to attract, Crystal Knows, it's a good tool that can help you with that. So it's actually a tool that helps you to write text applicable for a specific type, and also it tells you what kind of sentences you need to write. For example, for one time you need like more details and focus more on the culture and the harmony. For another type, it will be like straightforward information, keep it short, no bullshit. In terms of, let's say, more conscientious type, they know they want to have like all the details. So knowing the organization, you can use this tool. It's the shortest way to start applying something and then adjust the job description from there.
Yeah, actually, I never like written a job description from this angle. I have done it in reachouts, like, and it's super easy to do if you know the person quite well. So you know where to push and then what to emphasize and then so on. Like, and then of course, like in general, like, We usually use a template or the logic from this book, like a method of hiring has a really good, but not specifically like this. So this probably can give you really good results on getting people who match the like profile that you're actually looking for.
Interesting.
Sounds super, super good way to do it. So what about sourcing? What are some psychology back tips for sourcers? Yeah. Like, so we have a job description. We know who we're looking for now. Now we need to start. Like, of course, you can do job ads, whatever. You can ask for recommendations. But if you, let's say, you start to look for them.
So this one is actually like the hardest step to apply something, since you have like really limited information for them. You just like here, and we are talking just about sourcing, so not yet an outreach, right? So you have LinkedIn, you have some description that they have written, might be just like copy pasted from someone else, especially today with ChatGPT writing most of the descriptions, right? So it's becoming more and more tricky to use something here. However, I do have some guidance on this one, and something that we also are practicing internally. And I would like to mention, so here in terms of this, I would not recommend selecting people based on the hypothesis that you will have. You need to remember that at this stage, we only have hypothesis of candidates, and it will help us just, let's say, to prioritize who to reach out first. So that's the note that I would like to add on this step.
But so what do you mean by you wouldn't use the hypothesis that you have? So you would expand the search, or what does it mean?
Yeah, let's say that that we are looking as the same example that we shared, like senior business development director, right? And we already know that we are looking for someone who is ideally more dominant and influential. The reason why those two, because it's, let's say, smaller companies, so they are still not heavy on managing enormous teams and so on. So they do not need some process oriented. going back to the conversation, we are looking for someone who is more dominant and influential based on this theory. And then it's more of a headhunting approach. There are 500 candidates out there within the market that we are looking for, looking like they fit the criteria, right? And then we have only capacity to reach out limited number of candidates. And it is in our interest to prioritize who to reach out first so we can close the position faster with less efforts, right? So while sourcing, what we can do is the ones who we feel that match this personality type, and I will share how that can be done. We put a tag on them when adding to our ATS or CRM. So we actually put a tag, let's say dominant and an A. And this is just a hypothesis from our end, but it will be tested when we see the reply rates after that, then we have the screening calls, and then we can actually double check. So in this scenario, there are 500 candidates available. While sourcing, we'll keep the regular approach, but then deciding who to be reached out first, I would look for the ones who have more signs of having dominant or influential personality. And that how that can be done, there are several ways. We can look at their interests. It's a usual good indication of what they are following, what kind of information they are interested in. The second one, it can be the wording. For example, more dominant people have more straightforward language. Sometimes they do not even include a really long description, and they speak about achieving results, about power, status, leaderships, directing people, managing people, and so on. If we are looking for influential, then we are looking for someone who speaks a lot about, let's say, ideas, networking, communication, and things like that. They are using words like inspire, motivate, dynamic, enthusiastic, and so on. So what we do in these steps is actually making a hypothesis of which candidate can be better for us, and we prioritize the outreach for them. And that's everything that I will suggest doing, not going into too much unneeded theories. So this is good for a start. And then in the outreach, we can use the hypothesis of the person in order to adjust the message accordingly.
Okay.
We have tested this as well. We needed to play along, to go back and forward. There are some differences. If the job description requires one type and then you're attracting different types, that can be a bit tricky. But in general, if everything is aligned, it tends to improve both the response rates and after that, the conversion rates as well. Of course, it will need to be tested, and there are plenty of factors that relate to response rates and this one. But if you have experimental group and just one where you try this approach, you can test the differences.
So we are basically at the reach out. So of course we do the sourcing, we do reach outs, but maybe we can cover also the general ideas in communication in overall, because there's a lot of communication in the way.
Yeah. So in terms of outreach, I just share that. So we actually adjust the message in order to address the personality type that we assume that person is. We will actually check. We can actually check it to some level during screen calls, but at this level, it is served just to increase our chances. And that's it, you know? And this is in the outreach from this perspective. In terms of what else we can use, so there is something about, called as implicit egotism theory, which tells that people prefer to have things and to respond faster to things that really address to them, mentioning their name. We have done tests mentioning the name two times at the beginning and at the end, along with the call for action. Some mentioning of their experience that have been interesting for them, if they've joined some event or something like that, and that increases responses rate. And here actually comes the part of personalization. So if you need to outreach to a larger amount of people, I would say the ones that you have shortlisted to be aligned with your type, do a personalized outreach for them, and the rest, you can do a semi-personalized with templates and so on if it's needed. Something else that here can be used, there are behavioral economics principles that I would not recommend and would not share, since can be misused a lot. Also, keep it short. They have few seconds attention span. We do not want to overload them with information. So also using the chunks, also using the end and the beginning as memorizing parts, and people can remember six to seven things at a time. So keeping short and aligned.
But like you mentioned, I think if you have a theory and you want, let's say, somebody who is more dominant, and then you do this personalized reach out. If they really are, then the response rate definitely is going to be higher. If they're not, then it's going to be probably maybe lower, because it's going to be something that they don't like. But in the end, like, if you want that dominant person, it doesn't matter, probably. And for the other, you use more generalized, you don't go with this tone of voice, like, so I would call it tone of voice that you would use. Like, yeah.
Them, more aligned to what the job description type is. And then the hypothesis is that you will attract the people who resonate with those values as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as I said, like, more factors play role here. So you'll need to test and play with things until you find your way.
So now we're getting to the point that you said is very well covered in recruitment. So we are like picking the candidates to move forward, like pre-screening, interviewing, maybe testing, what can be done here?
In terms of screening, you would like to share something regarding that? Or the selection assessment part?
Yeah, I can give you an example. So how I do pre-screening, I don't use any test or something. So my pre-screening, usually is, I have candidates, I have, 30-minute call. Sometimes it's longer, it depends. I try to understand how the person works, what is, who they are, or what is their personality, or so I understand how they work, and then I can understand what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, make decisions, okay. Are these weaknesses a problem for me? Of course, it's based on short call. So the hypothesis there can be wrong, but it gives me an overview. And then when I go to the next step, usually it's more about testing. So testing, I can see what they actually do. I already have their, what they have done before, as a CV or whatever, and then I try to understand who is the person. Then I want to see what they can actually do. So I give them a home task. So then they will have an interview or a meeting with other people who they will work with. So to see if they also match. Usually if I don't do the pre-screening, there might be some culture lasting or I would take part of the interview. But my pre-screening basically to understand how that person works. And that's in a way maybe psychological behavior, on the person, who the person is, how the person thinks.
Yeah, very good approach. I believe super effective, the one that you are already using. Of course, those are limited, usually around 20-30 minutes calls, right?
Yeah.
So of course, if we would be able to check everything during that step, there wouldn't be a need for further four-step process, right? So in terms of that, few things doing on my side there, and especially in agency, it's great that since you have the room to that in agency side, learning a bit more regarding the person. So my idea is not to sell the role, but to meet that person, and then interest comes as a result. So few things there, first understanding their needs and to see how they're matched with the organizational ones and the ones that they're specific. The role that is specifically open. The good thing about agencies, if we see that misalignment here, we can offer them something else, and the trust with the candidate is on a higher level at the initial start as well. Then after we do that, we can also briefly check some of the main competencies that are being asked for, and here I use the reciprocity norm. So actually providing with a lot of information as much as possible so they can, after that, share as well, being open. While screening, it's always important. If we want to have, more sensitive questions, if we have for the screening call, the salaries for some of people, how much they're earning right now, it might be the exact reason why they are looking for a change. For some people, that's more sensitive. And if we start the initial conversation with that, they tend to hide it or just provide us with answer that can just satisfy us, and that's where the biases are. But then from qualitative research practices, it is always good to start with wider questions, with more safe, I would say, and then as you go deeper in the conversation and you slowly begin to build trust, then to go to the ones who are more significant, and that will increase your success as well in terms of this Of course, a lot of things can be used, like any psychology theories can be used in this one. From psychotherapy, transactional analysis give you a lot of handy tools how to see behavior. But for recruiters, I think that these ones that we mentioned would be enough.
And usually, like, it depends on the company, but usually the process is quite long. And actually, my wife is at the moment in the new job search, and I can see like how the actions of the company demotivate, like if they do something like in the process or something is unclear or whatever, like how the motivation goes down, and then when they do something great, then how the motivation raises. So it's super interesting to see at the moment from the side, like how it is happening. But what like companies can do to motivate candidates and keep them engaged in the hopefully short hiring process, but usually it's long.
Yeah. So I would say, like, from recruiter side, the companies can of course like optimize their hiring process based on feedback, and we do not need to extend that topic a lot. But in terms of what the recruiter can do, build trust with the candidates and stick to that. Trust has five facets. One of them is being transparent. The other one is actually like delivering what you said that you will deliver. So provide feedback on time, coach them, help them, show them that you also care for them, and then explain if there is a need for waiting. Don't just like keep them hanging. A very good way to remove some of the negative experiences is by really explaining that the process really well at the start. So that's why in screening calls we need to share how the process will look like, how long it will be, and so on. So those are some of the things. And then like provide them with constant feedback, keep them engaged, and address any concerns that they have as they go. So these here are actually the needs that we mentioned at the beginning. The Maslow theory here are important, especially in offer acceptance state. They would like to be sure that actually if they're looking for a change because of, I don't know, their need for status improvement, that will actually happen, that they will have the autonomy in their position, that they will have, let's say, the team that the company have promised to them to lead. So things like that. In terms of salary, so in terms of offering, what recruiter can do is ensuring that everything that has been communicated in the initial stages that are actually being included in the offer. If there's no possibility for that, at least make plans how those can be addressed in the future. So here, it's goes in the, let's say, that risk avoidant, this part of the decision making, when we want to make sure that everything that scares them off from the offer is actually being addressed, of course, in an ethical manner.
So what are the five stages of building trust?
Yes, so they are not actually stages, there are more domains, I would say. So those are sub-dimensions of what is actually trust being like consisted of. And that's one of our also like core values as well. So one would be benevolence. It's actually like showing that you are caring for the best interest of the candidate. And that is like usually like being sensed during the conversation. Second one is reliability. So if we say that we follow up with them in 2 days, let's let it be 2 days. If we say that we will do something for them, we really need to do that in order to build the trust. If not, we just put ourselves in a trap and we are losing the trust in the really early stages. The other one is competence. So actually radiating that we can do what we are promised to do. We can, of course, be willing to do it, but they cannot trust us if they know that we wouldn't be like competent for that part. Third one, the fourth one would be more, let's say, summarized as honesty and like having like a full transparency with them. So if you see that some aspects of the job might be a potential deal breaker for them or might not be really aligned with what their expectations are, it's better that we communicate than they're finding it out. That way they will have the time like to think about it. They will perhaps ask your help for any guidance how they can like overcome that or negotiate that part as well. And the last one is openness, which is like related to the previous one. It's also being ready to build a good communication with them, like being also as they are exposed.
So when it comes to selecting the final candidates, like there is like a big part on the decision maker psychology. How common is bias? You already mentioned it before, and how to overcome this unconscious bias that it has.
Yeah, so like, I don't think that we can fully avoid it, to be honest. One is psychometric assessments, standardized one. If they are standardized, that means that they have been like proven to be reliable, which means that if repeated, similar results will be gathered. And then valid, which means that they're actually measuring what they say that they are measuring. Having the exact same process for every candidate help you like remove some of those biases and then look at their competences on more objective level. And then use a further step, like a final interview after that, to conduct behavioral or competency-based questions. And here you can actually like train your employees and hiring managers on how to, let's say, be aware of specific biases and how to actually evaluate if some of the competences are met or not. There are like several biases that can occur at any given point to any of us. Whatever is your level of I don't know, like seniority of experience, these happen all the time, and we just need to be humble enough to know that we are at the risk of doing such errors. The first one is confirmation bias, which is actually if we believe that we want to see something on the candidate, then we actually are biased to see that even it's not there. And that comes like, this is really common in recruiters, as we really want that candidate to be like the unicorn, the one that we are looking for. And we are start to assign something that is not there. The second one is halo effect. Halo effect, what it makes is if the candidate is really good at one part, we tend to evaluate their other aspects as also being above average. And this is also a bias. So what we can do here is just like having the competences well defined for a specific role and rate them separately and then combine everything. The one opposite to this one is the horn effect. Let's say the person had like really good impression for a specific question. And then we tend to see the other things that they share, like also evaluating more negatively. And that's why we also need like to have this, let's say, scoring system more objective and with some, let's say, KPI, some objective norms of how to value that. A similarity attraction. It is more likely that I would like candidates similar to me, and you perhaps will like candidates more similar to you. And this is a bias, and that's why in selection process it's good to have more interviewers, so not just one. But what we're trying like with a company that hasn't so much established process right now, we try to include two interviewers at a time, who are also valid, relatable for the role, and bring more to the candidate experience. Yeah. Anchoring effect is the first impression. So the importance of the first impressions. I might have like excellent first impression and not be so great candidate. And because of that, I might have advantage to some candidate that had like connectivity issues or had really bad day at the start, and it's already skewed. So those are the biases. And in order like to overcome that, psychological assessments, adding them in the selection step, and competence-based questions.
What we have also done is, I don't remember if it was in the book, but when we have different interviewers or people who talk, we don't share the notes with each other. So there is no, like, I don't know if it's also anchoring that if I see somebody else's like opinion on the person, it will affect me like on that side. But what I have seen mainly is, I think two things that can happen, that we hire somebody who's similar to us, which is super bad actually, because in the organizations it's good if you have different people complementing each other, like so somebody is better at something and then somebody else is better at something else, and in the end, like in a team, they basically complete each other. And the other way is probably that you hire somebody that is different to yourself, like, and that is actually good. Depends on the role, maybe sometimes it's good to have somebody similar. So I think these are like two things that usually maybe happens, like, and that you hire somebody. And on the psychology part, there is another interesting part. Like if you hire somebody who's similar to you, you will be super annoyed about the flaws they have, like because they will have the same things that you're. It's a mirror to yourself, and then you're angry at them. But actually, you're angry at yourself. Like, so that's what's gonna happen if you hire somebody who is similar to yourself. So there's gonna be honeymoon in the beginning. It's so good. It's so cool. Like, I love you. You're like me. And in the end, they're like, I hate you. Like, you do these dumb things. Like, but you're the same basically. So these kinds of things can happen.
Yes,
so,
these things can happen. Like, it's not necessarily the case, but can definitely happen. Like using the disc theory, one company wanted like to have more dominant people, so more action oriented, more ones like ready to achieve results, and then hire too many of those, and then the culture went down, and they will fight over dominance. So you need to have really good balance. Yeah. At least like three supporters for one dominant person.
I think that's super important thing to know. Also in the team environment, that there isn't room, at least in the same team, like for a lot of similar people, because they will start to compete. Like if they're dominant, for example, I've had that like in the early days. It can happen with co-founders, for example. If there's two people, like two heads on the dragon, they're pushing in separate ways, and these kinds of like things can happen. So that's definitely something that can be considered when putting together teams. Like, and of course, hiring new people to teams, how these people will work together.
I do have one that I can share with you regarding team roles, actually. The one that we are using in terms of psychometric assessments. So there are like several that are really good. Perhaps Big Five and DISC are the most widely used, but Hogan's personality assessments are being like recognized as ones with really good reliability and validity. Predictive Index, they also have cool, really good assessments. And they actually introduced something called talent optimization, a super useful tool. For anyone who is within those topics, I would suggest they take a look at their talent optimization programs and how they solve that with software and knowledge support as well. And my and our perhaps personal favorite, it's the assessment of Cytec International. They are within assessment for more than 20 years. And we get in touch, like, thanks to our partners of Elite Academy in the Balkans and Italy. And it's a very comprehensive assessment that has really good reputation and precision. And I can share, they also cover like a lot of things, but I can share a topic regarding a slide regarding how the results in terms of what you just mentioned, the team roles. Yeah. So these are like one page of 20 page report. And this report actually is related to the Belbin's team roles. And here you can see more than 8 different team roles that there are identified within a team. And then what we are looking like to see when we build a team to have like a compatible characteristic. For example, my dominant ones are coordinator, the first one, and then resource investigator, and then the third one is team builder. And then my co-founder actually is more on the inspector completer, while also having some resource investigator things like that. At one point, we really needed someone who to shake things up, you know, shaper driver. And we actually had a strategic hire since we became more, let's say, avoiding risk and avoiding charge and things like that. And this can be like super helpful when building your initial team.
Yeah, we also, like, I think I have taken the Big Five test, and then also like I have used this 16 personalities. It's in a way, it's quite accurate. Of course, usually there is something off, but in general, like, you get quite good idea of yourself, and also like if you do it with some of the people, like, you can get understanding that who they are, like, and it doesn't take too much time, like. So it
actually 16 personalities, it's not recommended to be used for recruiting, but more for team building activities. to get to know each other. And in terms of hiring, it doesn't have like really good predictability scores.
Yeah, I haven't used it for recruiting, but in general to understand like how to maybe work with somebody, collaborate. So we did it with the founders, like when we started Relancer. Like I haven't used it for building the team, but that was super crucial, and we tried to do as much as we can to understand will it work in the long term. So I think you already covered, but maybe we can go over again, like, so how can recruiters achieve a higher offer acceptance rate? Like you mentioned some of the things earlier, can we maybe go over them, and then if you want to add anything else like on top of that.
So in terms of accepting offers, I think that I covered that previously. So actually like making sure that everything that has been like communicated previously as concerns or as needs of the candidate, that you make sure that these are addressed. Also coaching the hiring managers to craft a special one and bringing them the position of the candidate. Being transparent both with them on what are the pros and cons of having such employees, so they can draft a good onboarding plan for them, or let's say after that, like a management plan for them. Plenty of things can be used. We do not definitely want to use dark psychology here for influencing decisions. Candidate accepting a job is much important for them than it's for us as recruiters or as for the company. For them, it's like a big chunk of their life, and it's like super unethical to do this. That's why I'm not sharing those ones during our call, since it can be misused. In sales, I see like even in like behavioral economics and in marketing, they have been used, and some of them are already started to be like regulated or forbidden. In recruitment, it's good that not much of that is being used.
Like I know there are books about social engineering, so basically influencing people. Of course, it can be probably like a sword, like a knife with double edge, because of course maybe you can influence somebody to accept, but if they like quit in the next 3 months or whatever, then it's not good for you. Like so in that it can be maybe risky.
It's a lose situation on the long term. So the company loses, you lose in terms of your credibility, and the candidates, I think, is the most. It's something that like really, really not ethical, and especially like psychologists, we are trained in terms of ethics in what we do.
Yeah, I understand. Like if you would be only thinking of acceptance rates as one metric and you want to improve it, then you're like, okay, let's do this. This is going to improve it, but it's going to affect some other metrics, and then that's going to be bad. So you have to see the bigger picture. So that's good. So don't use social engineering. So let's move to the maybe the last stage. Of course, like recruitment is done, like the candidate accepted the offer, like so the onboarding starts. What on the psychological aspect employers need to like achieve so the candidates would succeed, like what you have to make them feel or what's important?
So here, like plenty of things can be done, of course, depending on which approach do you have and what is like most important for them. I would say start with creating a positive first impression with the primary effect. So making sure have the first day organized and have them organized to address all of the needs that we discussed first. So getting them with the basics of the office or the organization, of if it's like virtual, give them a guide there. Then second, get them to know where who they can reach out for their specific, let's say, inquiries that they might have. Then meet them with most of the people, meet them especially with the people who are a good example of behavior within your company as well. And then share with them a lot regarding your culture and the long-term vision of the company, since those are like initial experiences of the candidate and are usually stronger to what's to come. Allow them to have some flexibility, autonomy in terms of how they would like to approach the onboarding. So not super, super structured. It will help them with their autonomy needs. And then in terms of cognitive overload, don't try to share everything within 2 days, since they will most likely forgot some crucial aspects and then will be asking you to do it again. Try to organize it in more, let's say, digestible chunks. The third one that can be done, it is by a theory of expectations. It's like clear, define the clear things they need to do. especially in the beginning. So provide clarity on the, let's say, like job expectations. If there are any KPIs, share them. This is the right time to do that. Like remove as much as possible fuss within the process as you can. Yeah. It is also like good to make this for them like quite achievable. So if you can organize the onboarding in order so they can have some quick wins, this will help them like to feel confident that they will actually be successful in the step and actually onboard a bit faster.
Why I asked the question was like, I have seen some companies who have quite low, like they say 30% of our employees go through our probation period because our expectations are so high. Like, but I was thinking like maybe your onboarding is so bad because people are good, but you just can't like get them going. It can be either way. Like the expectation maybe are so high, but if you have like a bad onboarding, like then people either quit or like they will not, might not be successful and they might be like demotivated or don't have the confidence and so on. So it's definitely crucial. And so it doesn't stop from the hiring. Like you have to get it, you have to get them going.
You know, like even if you get like an A player, the best one, and then you put them really unoptimized for success, so they are not set for success right from the beginning, then it will cost you a lot as a company, and then certainly it will cost the candidate as well.
So I think it's time to wrap up from here. So that's it for episode 5 of Freelancer Podcast. If you like this episode, feel free to subscribe and share it. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope to see you in the next one.
Thank you for the invitation, Eero. Cheers.